Israel has struck back against Iran. So why is that not the topic of the Daily Objective just hours later? Well, it's not worthy of being the topic of the Daily Objective just hours later. It will be the topic of the reality show, but yeah, we'll talk about it then. What happened on Saturday, though, with Israel's with Iran's attack on Israel was several countries were involved in making sure that not too much harm is caused by the Iranian attack. Among them, the US, Britain, and some countries in the Middle East. So Jordan shot down some drones, and Saudi Arabia and the UAE shared some intelligence about what's coming. And people in Israel, now think that these are Israel's BFFs, that Israel has so many friends in the Middle East, that everybody is behind Israel in its attempts to not allow Iran to do what they've been promising to do, which is wipe Israel off the map. Is this truly the case? Is Jordan now BFFs with Israel? Is Saudi Arabia, who we're hearing is about to normalize relations with Israel, are they Israel's friends? Should Israel want friends like that? Welcome to the Daily Objective, day 196 of the war in Israel. Hey, Morgan, your thoughts?
I don't think they should want friends like that. And I think the view that I have seen on Twitter as well, that Israel suddenly has a lot of Arab allies, I think is basically a fantasy. An understandable one, probably, in the sense that I imagine for many Israelis, who could have imagined that Jordan would have done something which defended Israel. Now, I don't think it's quite right to understand it as them defending Israel, but to the extent that what that's referring to is shooting down missiles, it's an understandable thing in that it's a very distinct thing for Jordan to have done and is different from its historic policy and is surprising in a sense, given the strong criticism of King Abdullah of the war in Gaza and the way it's been conducted. But it is a fantasy, and all of those states haven't even been sheepish in admitting that they've done it. They've angrily stated that they didn't do this to protect Israel. They did it for, in the case of Jordan, for the reasons of their own security and sovereignty. And there was, and very emphatically said that that they would also shoot down anything coming from Israel, were it to be going the other way. So what they wanted to do was to protect their own authority and sovereignty over their airspace. And, in the case of the UAE, which has normalized relations with Israel, as far as I'm aware, the reporting is saying they didn't even do anything in the defense. They just kind of allowed US refueling planes into their airspace. So, yeah, I don't buy this idea that suddenly all these Arab nations are friends of Israel. They're doing it in a sense for reasons of realpolitik, not a sudden outbreak of love of Israel.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen, for the super chat. In the days before October 7th, and certainly the days before we launched the reality show, I was very rarely on this channel. I was mostly behind the scenes. One episode, well, I did some shows, but one that I remember doing was when Israel normalized relations with the UAE. I did an episode explaining why I'm against it. I first of all, my general position as a friend and former host on this channel once said in relation to Israelis who look at Trump as an ally, irrational people are not your friends. Even if you have an agreement with them on something, and you might even want to cooperate with them on something for whatever reason, they are not your friends. They are not people you should look to as allies of the country. I very much would love to see the day where Western countries don't even engage or don't recognize countries that are dictatorships, that don't respect the rights of their own citizens. This is true of every country in the Middle East except Israel. So this idea that Saudi Arabia, which is a horrible, horrible, Islamist theocracy, that this is now going to be a friend of Israel because they're afraid of some other horrible Islamic theocracy. Where do you think this is going long term? I ask the people celebrate this as a show of some sort of weird unity between Israel and countries that really Israel should look at as either current enemies or probably at some point in the future enemies. Jordan, of course, attacked Israel in the past, realized they couldn't win in military, in any war, and eventually signed a peace deal with Israel. And that peace deal, you can see in their statements whenever anything happens with the Palestinians, how serious they are about that peace deal. Egypt, which has had, several coups in the past decade plus, whoever is in power is bad for Israel. Some are worse, and the current ones are probably not as bad, but they are still clear in their stance, which is pro-Palestinian and therefore anti-Israeli. So, yeah, it really looks like Israel is ignoring as much of reality as they can and focusing on one aspect of it to convince themselves that they now have friends in the region.
Yeah, and I mean, so there was this think tank from Belgium that was being quoted a lot in the reporting on this called something like the International Crisis Group. And their head of policy or something was talking about this on Twitter and said that the Jordanian involvement was a direct result of the diplomatic ties established from the 1994 peace deal, whatever. And I think that's completely wrong. I mean, just looking at what the Jordanians said is that they were doing this because they wanted to establish the security of their airspace, their sovereignty, and as I said, that they would do the same if it were coming from Israel. So there's no indication at all that they were doing this because they were protecting a country which they view as their ally. And in fact, it seems like they were actually kind of torn about it in the sense that they had to weigh off what they perceived to be in their interest, because it doesn't seem going to be very popular with their own population, because that's not a population that's particularly friendly to Israel. And so they had to do something which would be unpopular with their population on that front, but which would have been even worse were they just to allow a foreign country to walk all over it by launching missiles and drones through its airspace without their say so. So I don't think this is a result of diplomacy at all. That what the tweet, what she was saying was that diplomacy ensures peace, I guess, almost like a democratic peace theory, diplomatic peace theory kind of thing. And I don't think that's true at all. And I don't think you'll see these countries coming to Israel's aid in the sense of if Israel were to invade Iran or launch a massive attack on Iran, I don't think you'll see that happening. I don't think you'll see them. That means there's no chance of them coming to defend Israel if Hezbollah were to invade Israel in the north or any of this stuff. So if there's any suggestion from people that suddenly Israel has these new Arab military allies on its border, I think it's just fantastical. I don't think there's any basis to it at all, even if it is surprising that they did what they did on first glance. But it shouldn't be surprising if you really consider it for a bit.
Yeah, thanks Bonnie and thanks Gail for your super chats. Victoria says the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So I mean, this is let's look at Syria. Assad and ISIS are enemies. Who is our friends in such a situation? No, the thing is, in the Middle East, we have we're looking at different groups fighting with each other, but really having the shared value of wanting to kill all the Jews. And generally having shared values in terms of wanting totalitarianism, just maybe disagreeing on the particular kind. So we spoke a few days ago about the response of this PLO official who said that he was disappointed by the Iranian attack because it was announced in advance, because they didn't shoot, they shot these really slow drones, they didn't do what they could have done, but he's happy that an attack happened because it's an attack on Israel. So in that sense, I think that's probably the kind of sentiment on the street, the Arab street, if you will. But it's not, and in that sense, if any internal conflicts are created by this, that's always a good thing. But that doesn't mean any side in such a conflict is our friend. No side in such a conflict is our friend. They're all our enemies. We, you know, what we actually do about it depends on this specific conflict and the specific enemies, whether we sit it out and let them fight it out, or whether we actually have to get involved. But what's important is to really understand the situation, understand who we're dealing with, for better or worse, and recognize that no, just the fact that some people might not want Iranian drones and rockets flying over their head does not mean that they are suddenly hardcore Zionists.
Yeah, and if you look, I mean, you mentioned Syria. Syria is aligned with Russia and against ISIS, and ISIS, you know, recently launched an attack in Russia. And so if ISIS is our enemy and Russia is the enemy of ISIS, does that make Russia our friends? Very clearly it doesn't. So whilst there are kind of some circumstances, I guess, where the idea of your enemy being your friend, it doesn't really bear any fruit. And one of the things that good countries should do in the world when there are two evil powers, forces, groups, whatever, fighting each other is kind of hope that they wear each other down or take each other out. So you shouldn't be making alliances with evil powers on the basis that they can help you fight another enemy. Not really, I don't think. And unfortunately, in the Western view, that's formed and shaped too much of foreign policy in the past. I think, was it Reagan who armed bin Laden and Al-Qaeda in the Middle East on the premise that they could help us? I might be getting that wrong, but if I'm getting that right, then that was a disastrous policy and just showed a complete lack of ability to identify really who these people were, or just a kind of pragmatism following the kind of enemy, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. And that was disastrous. So yeah, that you can't approach foreign policy with that approach.
Yeah, I was thinking of a similar example, which I remember in the run-up to the war in Iraq, you know, the left kind of felt that they should be against the war, but as the left usually, you know, as it usually goes with them, didn't really have the arguments. One of their arguments was, you know, that the U.S. dealt with Iraq in the past. They showed this picture of Rumsfeld and Saddam Hussein, and, you know, that is true. You know, America has always done this. The West, or at least for many decades, has done this. Looked at the Middle East, where again there are no good actors, and tried to figure out who might be a little worse, might be better, not because of anything about them that's better, but because they're not allied with Russia. So this very much goes against, by the way, what we're advocating on this channel, and the reason we're covering this war every single day is, you know, not you should support Israel because they're allies of the U.S. You should support Israel because they are the better side, because they are the side of life as opposed to the side of death, which is the Palestinians, which is, you know, what their culture is about. So this is how you should choose your alliances. And if you actually that is how you chose your alliances, you would not think of considering countries like Jordan and Saudi Arabia and even the UAE. I know they have nice skyscrapers, but you wouldn't consider them potential allies in any serious way.
Yeah, I don't think you would either. I mean, if you just read into either the laws which some of the countries like Jordan or the Saudis have on the books, and the way they treat, I mean, just women, for example. I mean, was it in Saudi Arabia a few years ago where everyone was applauding them for allowing women to drive? I mean, wow, that's such an advance, isn't it? A really important principle of Ayn Rand's, which has been sorely lacking from Western foreign policy for a long time, but which we dearly need to be reintroduced, is that you can't sanction evil people or evil powers, because the good has nothing to gain from evil and actually has everything to lose. And unfortunately, in that kind of policy we were just talking about of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, we do lose out in the long run. And in deciding who your allies are going to be, you need to be really principled about that. And if you aren't, if you're deciding much more on the range at the moment in the short term, Henry Kissinger style, then you will lose out in the long run, even if some small alliance in the short term, you perceive that as gaining you something. You can't just, in no context, can you just think in the immediate future. You have to think all the way. And there's countless examples of Western foreign policy, and probably from Israel's perspective as well, of short-term thinking damaging you in a very meaningful way in the long term.
A few months before October 7th, we did a show about this column that Thomas Friedman of the New York Times wrote. And, you know, in Israel, he's held in really high regard and for some bizarre reason seen as Israel's biggest fan. And he wrote in that column, this was about the talks around normalizing relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. He said that Saudi Arabia shouldn't take part in this because they would be legitimizing Netanyahu's government. You know, when you have voices like that, in some of the most prominent voices in the freest country in the world, saying stuff like that, looking at the Middle East, looking at this area where, again, you have one country that, for all its flaws, is rights respecting to a large degree, and everyone else does not recognize the rights of its individuals. And you have somebody saying, you know what, one of these, this particular, probably in the top two worst countries in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, them negotiating with Israel on normalizing relations is them legitimizing Israel. Then you kind of understand how we, politics is downstream from culture. Ideas do end up shaping politics, they do take time. So if this is how they think in mainstream among mainstream intellectuals, and yes, Thomas Friedman is an intellectual, even if you don't like him, then it's no surprise where politics ends up, and where you look at the current leadership in the U.S., but you can also look at some of in the Democratic Party might think of as their future, and see much worse options than Biden, as difficult as it is to imagine that at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, and another reason why, I mean, I don't think these countries are allies of Israel anyway, but a reason why Israel shouldn't want them to be allies is that evil people, evil countries, I mean, this applies domestically as well as internationally, but evil groups really crave the legitimacy and dignification they get from association with good countries. So part of the reporting about this, whilst Jordan was defending the sovereignty of its airspace, the suggestion in the reporting that I saw from Intercept was that the reason why the UAE is doing this isn't as a result of the normalization of relation with Israel. It was doing it because it wants to stay in the good books with America. And I think, I can't remember whether this was UAE, but I might be right. I think they got something like a $1.3 billion loan when they, as part of the Abraham Accords from the US, one of these countries did. So they're doing it for reasons of advantage, but also part of the reason why these countries want to be associated with Western powers like the US is because they get the kind of dignity that rubs off on them by association. And why do they invite influencers to come into the countries and post on their Instagram that they're such great places to be? Is because they want to seem like they aren't the oppressive, awful countries that they are, and that they're like wealthy, lovely places where anyone would wish to go. And if they were to be associated with Israel diplomatically, as in like in a formal alliance, then it would be the same thing. And Israel shouldn't give out that kind of dignity to these countries at will. I mean, and these countries don't seem to want it, and so Israel shouldn't, but let's say they did, and that wouldn't work for Israel's interests either, by dignifying these countries, because then they would have a further hold on to power, when what Israel should want is for these governments to be toppled and to be replaced by much better governments in the long term, which doesn't seem to be likely to happen in the near future. But that's what it would actually be in Israel's interest in the long term.
Yeah, and if you are thinking long term, the likelihood of it happening in the short term shouldn't really matter in terms of you not dealing with them. So, for example, I don't think a Western country should deal with Dubai. I don't think a Western country should deal with Iran. There's a difference there, which is in Iran, there's a chance that the local population, the citizens, would stand up to their government and would help any attempts to topple them. Whereas in the UAE, I don't think that's the case, although they do have many foreigners living there. Those foreigners have no actual rights. They have, we're going to look the other way as long as you bring in Western money. And so to Inger's point, Inger says, you really should make alliances. and Israel does. And then Ingrid gives the example of Azerbaijan. I don't know enough about that example, so I'm going to go back to Dubai and the UAE. I bring this up when Dubai comes up because Westerners love Dubai. You know, it has it looks nice with skyscrapers. It has kind of, you know, toys for Westerners. It has the kind of things that'll bring Westerners in. It also has, you know, we've spoken about those two. At least two occasions that I've heard of where women went to the police to report that they had been raped and then were arrested because they had sex outside of wedlock, which is illegal in Dubai. And that might not be important to people. The fact that homosexuality is illegal in these countries and is punishable by imprisonment at best might not be a big deal for people who think, okay, this doesn't apply to me. But you should think of it as something that matters to you. And you should think of it as this is the country, this is the society that I'm endorsing by choosing to deal with. And unfortunately, yeah, the West does choose to endorse them by dealing with them. Israel does beg any Arab country that would agree to not, you know, want to formally say that they want Israel wiped off the map to deal with them. And no, this is not a positive in any way. What is a positive is the $20 super chat from Jonathan Honig. Thank you for that, Jonathan. Morgan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that if you were to have a look at the history of Western or good and free countries making alliances, kind of dirty alliances with unfree countries, I don't think that if you look at the history of it, that it goes well for Western countries in doing that. I mean, the UK and the US making, you know, bedfellows with Stalin, to what extent did that allow the Soviet Union to continue? I mean, even if we're talking about in the context of Iran, you know, they were joined, certainly the UK and the Soviet Union were involved in invading Iran during World War II and then later on as well. And then, so I don't think this actually goes well for Western countries because the Soviet Union was a big threat to Western countries after the Second World War. And then what you were talking about, Westerners going into these countries. There's a teacher who I met who works with my partner who lived for a while in Qatar, who wasn't involved recently, but is another one of these similar countries. And she got to go there, rented out her house. And, you know, a teacher's salary is well enough, but it's not like a lucrative salary in the UK. She lived there for free. There's no income tax. So basically she was renting out her house here and making a lot of money over there, paying no income tax, getting paid pretty well to be there and to teach kids English, basically. And so she's come back quite wealthy as a result of it, having paid off her mortgage by the age of 30, having, you know, bought two cars and whatever. So, you know, when she was talking about this, she was clearly saying, yeah, look, it was great. I had a really nice time. I lived in this little enclave that was beautiful. I've come back really wealthy. And whilst it's understandable that someone who wasn't exactly wealthy would find that attractive, what she was doing, whether she appreciates it or not, is dignifying a country like Qatar and all of the teachers and all these people who go over there and do that, is dignifying that country, bringing money into it. And she's coming back and saying to her other teachers, yeah, you should really go over there and do that. It's a cool place to be. And that's a way that's something that these countries want to happen so that they, again, so they aren't viewed as oppressive dictatorships who abuse their own people and all this stuff, right? And, you know, it was difficult for me to get her to see why that was bad for her to do. But I think it was bad for her to do, even though, you know, I understand why you wouldn't want to be paying income tax. So Western power shouldn't make alliances with these countries, and then Western citizens shouldn't go and sanitize them either.
Yeah. And it does start with a citizen. It starts with the culture. It starts with the idea, the idea of multiculturalism, which also says you can't judge, you know, a culture as inferior, even if, you know, here, you know, if somebody uses the word gay as an insult, you would, you know, stop talking to them forever. And you are going and endorsing a country that might throw gay people off of buildings. You know, somehow people convince themselves that you know, there's different standards, which, you know, is anyway, it's a bit condescending to the people of those countries as well, as if they can't do better. This is their culture, and that is what they're stuck with. Just Inger's response to what I said: it is not about not important or that it matters. It is about living in the world. In the context of Israel, I think that's a big problem of how Israel perceives itself. Israel exists in an area where everybody wants it wiped off the map, because it has shown strength in the past, and because it still has, there's still this idea that Israel is somehow strong. And as that idea is chipped away at, we see worse and worse things happening to Israel, and it begging its enemies to please be okay with it existing is not a step towards Israel continuing to exist. It's a step towards Israel's demise. So what Israel could do is say, you know, we are, anybody who threatens us, we are going to make sure they're unable to follow through on that threat. And anybody who stands in our way is considered a part of the threat. I think that would be a good policy by Israel towards its enemies and its neighbors, without saying to its neighbors, you know, you can say to Jordan, look, we're not coming after you, but we have to go over you to go after the people we are coming after, because they said they will wipe us off the map. If you want to be involved, remember what happened last time, or not last time, the time before last in 1967, where we encouraged you not to be involved and you chose otherwise. I think that would be a good policy. I don't see it happening, but I will continue to advocate for it in case Netanyahu is watching and really changes his mind because of what I say on this show. Any final thoughts, Morgan, before we wrap up?
Probably that Israel would need, I would think, to some extent, US backing in some sense, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to get it. But look, the ideal way that Western countries and a country like Israel, which in terms of the style of its governance and society, I think you should count as Western, is that they should hold alliances and friendly relations at a very high price. And if these countries want them, then, and like the West and America don't provide any leadership on this, so it's not like I'm saying they do this. But they should say, if you want to be considered like one of us, and if you want in on what we've got going on, then you have to reform and you have to liberalize, and or at least you have to be making movements, in very serious movements in that direction, away from what you are doing, because we don't believe in multiculturalism, and we don't believe in all societies are equal and you can do whatever you like to gay people or oppress women or rip out people's fingernails. I think in Syria, was it the fingernail factories in Syria? Whatever. Or you don't get to be our friend and you don't get to have our alliances and we won't respect your sovereignty and so on, right? But even Western countries don't do that and certainly haven't done that for a long time. So, but that would be the ideal against which you're judging how countries should conduct themselves in making these alliances.
I agree. And we're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks, Morgan. You know, I saw this thing yesterday on social media. This thing popped up saying that I don't know if I said this yesterday, but I saw that Lisa Kudrow once met Jerry Seinfeld at a party and said to him, hi. And then he said, you're welcome. In basically saying, you know, Friends would air right after Seinfeld. And so, you know, you're now successful because of us. The reality show follows this show. So I can say to the reality show, you're welcome. The reality show is on in 2 minutes. Thanks, everybody, for joining. We'll see you over there.
Bye-bye.